Ephesus people, there's this little temptation sometimes.
What's that?
Ethicist? Yeah, somebody who studies ethics. So I'm getting a PhD in ethics. So I have I'm studying ethics. And there's you know, there may be this sort of temptation with some of these issues to say, well, you know, let's find somebody, like, say, an ethicist, and just get a nice list. You know, like, here's the good list, here's the bad list. You know, go read the scriptures or whatever and come up with our good and bad list, hand it out to everyone. And, you know, like, so, you know, like, why do we really need discernment? Can't we just kind of do this? And they, unfortunately, they, you know, I would love it because I think it would, you know, provide some job security for me. Maybe, I don't know. Of course, once the list is published, then there goes my job. So, but the problem is, of course, this can't be done. There's so much gray area because, you know, what is good for one person may not be good for another. So I think about the example from the letter of Paul where he talks about eating meat that's been sacrificed in the temples. And, you know, on the one hand, like, you know that those pagan gods are nothing, and so, yeah, you know, you can eat the meat. And, of course, in the ancient world, it was really hard to find meat that wasn't from the temple, so it's really like you can eat meat, not that meat, but you can eat meat. But then he says in other cases, people will see you eat meat and think that paganism and Christianity are compatible, you know, like they, you can be both. And so maybe it's best if you just are vegetarian, you know. I mean, I'm paraphrasing Paul a little bit there, but, you know, you can find it. And there are other examples. I kept a cookie. That's my example. I picked up one of the delicious chocolate chip cookies that are, you know, you said were inevitable at things like this. And, you know, just as an example, you know, it's just a simple thing. For most people, we're like, oh, it's a cookie. It's going to get us through the second half after lunch. We need a little sugar. But we also know that for somebody who's diabetic, this could be really harmful. For somebody who's trying to lose weight, it's at least not very helpful. We certainly, for none of us, would want to eat a plate full of cookies for lunch. Well, we might want to, but it might give us a stomach ache. You know, so we have a sense of having to, I mean, this is a really kind of frivolous example, but you have a sense of having to discern, you know, what are your needs? Like, did you run a half marathon this morning? Like, let's bring you the whole plate of cookies. No problem. So all of us are going to have to think for ourselves how to answer that question. Of course, some of us, like, say me, you know, I have no willpower when it comes to sweets. If I have them in the house, I eat them all. Like, until they're gone, that's it. I just, like, I have to not have them in the house. So we know we don't always make those decisions well. Hopefully we make more important decisions better. Another example that I can think of, I don't know why it popped into my head when I was putting this together, but movies, movie choices. I cannot watch horror movies. I don't enjoy them, first of all. Second of all, I feel the entire time that I'm just anxious, getting more anxious, like, all right, the music tells me something bad is going to happen. I don't want to see this. I start going like this and like this. I know people who find horror movies just relaxing fun. I don't understand it exactly myself, but if they don't sit around after the horror movie going, What was that noise? This is my other problem. I just got to turn this light on. You know, if they're not having those problems, then they have perhaps discerned that, you know, it can be fun for them. And I've determined that it's not good for me. It's not fun for me. And I just don't watch them. You know, and I know a lot of people, yeah, nod, yes. I don't actually understand horror movies, but I know some people like them. And they just think they're funny. And fun, and you know, I don't know. You know, and we could probably come up with some other examples of things that are perfectly fine for one person, maybe relaxing, fun, you know, just a way to kind of blow off steam or whatever, and just are not good for somebody else. Anybody want to venture up an example?
Listening to jazz.
Yeah, some people, maybe that puts them to sleep, or, you know, they're just makes them like, oh, I can't really listen to something I like better. So, you know, we have personal preferences. You know, and any kind of music might be that way. Some people really love rap, and it's not my cup of tea, but then neither is classical music for the most part. And I know a lot of people really love classical music. So, you know, some people would find it really, really beautiful and really, you know, like what they need after a tough day, just sit and relax and put on their favorite music, but it's different favorite music for everybody. So, you know, we have this need for discernment in these little things like delicious chocolate chip cookies, which I will save and eat afterwards, despite the fact that maybe I shouldn't. But, you know, we develop, so discernment, you know, I mentioned it's a later chapter in the book. It's something we develop over time. It really involves evaluating a situation or a thing, whatever it is, chocolate chip cookies, for instance, horror movies, ethical dilemmas, evaluating that in light of our beliefs. There's kind of, seems to me, two pieces, at least when we're talking ethics, there's kind of two pieces. And then there's the further piece when we're talking ethics, which is acting accordingly. So, you know, it's not just good to decide what the right thing to do is and be like, yeah, I should do that and, you know, eat 8 cookies, like what I would do if the cookies were in my home. But, you know, we have to follow up on our discernment, you know, put the discernment into action. As I said before, I think discernment tends to be something we do instinctively. It's sort of bound up in our values and our habits. We talk about virtues in the church. Virtues, classic example or classic definition of that, defines them as habits of the heart. Often, dispositions are characterizations that we do constantly over time. So we do them instinctively without really thinking about it. But the good news is that we can kind of take a step back and train those habits. So we can train ourselves into virtue. We can learn to be discerning. It takes a little bit of self-awareness and a little bit of soul-searching and really being honest with ourselves, which I know can be in and of itself a little. Sometimes we just don't want to admit to ourselves what it is that we do or what it is that we're facing. And the process of training ourselves into being discerning people also involves being clear about what it is that we value and what our beliefs are. And there's where we come back to this side of the sheet. You know, we have our Orthodox traditions, tradition with the capital T, tradition with the lowercase t, whatever you want to do with your T's and traditions. We have Orthodoxy and the resources of Orthodoxy, like, say, the books that we might read or the one that we might acquire at the bookstore, to help us learn that. So, we sort of have two pieces of it. We have to be really strong in our faith, I think, to be discerning about what's in keeping with Orthodoxy. And then we have to have enough experience in the world to, you know, be able to do things like sort through which of our information is accurate and which of our information facing us is inaccurate. I'm keeping an eye on the time, but I think we have enough time. We do a little bit of just kind of, as a large group, brainstorming, like, what do you think when looking at your lives and looking at how you build up your faith so that you have those clear ideas about belief, what kind of resources do you think that you use or would want to use or you would advise your godchild to use if your godchild came to you to have the strength of belief to be able to be discerning about the world around you? What resources are there in Orthodoxy? And this isn't a trick question. The Bible. See, not a trick question at all. Very good. what other things? I mean, you just throw some ideas out there.
Joy of life.
The joy of life.
I would tell my godchild to regularly attend liturgy.
Very good. I like that answer. John likes that answer too. Regularly attend liturgy. Because the liturgical texts are, I think, so important. John and I do the chanting at our church, and I keep wanting to, like, take notes when I'm in the middle of chanting Orthros. Like, oh, that hymn. You know, I'm always looking for, like, post-it notes to put in the liturgical book so that I can get back to it later. The liturgical texts are wonderful. Yes?
You know, I don't think it's uncommon, certainly not to me, and I would imagine for most people, that when you're feeling troubled and you attend liturgy, invariably that sermon speaks to you that day.
Yeah. Yeah. There's so much going on in the liturgy. not to mention the sacraments. You know, it's not a text, and so maybe in some ways it bypasses our conscience, rational brain, but, you know, we can't downplay the importance of receiving the body and blood of Christ as we are building up our faith and facing the dilemmas in the world.
The lives of the saints.
Lives of the saints, yes?
The hymns.
The hymns, yes.
Confession.
Confession, yeah.
I had a situation where I had a boss who was really awful. He was so, I can't even say the words, it was awful. He was so, did everything illegal. And I kept saying to myself, well, no, it's not. It'll go away. Well, after 9 months, I finally found myself in confession and said, I can't do this anymore. I can't lie anymore. I can't do this. And so I found that, you know, I can't hide the truth to the people that we're dealing with.
Right.
So I'm myself confession.
It's
like, yeah, this is it. This is what it's about.
Confession, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, another sacrament. Yes?
Yeah, I had to leave.
Confession didn't solve the problem, but it gave you perhaps, you know, the place in which to discern. Yeah, gave you the strength and the perspective. The strength for that.
A starting point to repentance.
Repentance, yeah. Repentance is a good ethical term, I think. Yes.
One thing is it shows us where we need to work.
Yeah.
When we have a reaction that we don't like, we can look at that and say, where did that come from?
Yeah, sure.
And how can I change that?
Right, yeah. So that self-awareness and soul-searching, like why did this situation make me angry, or why am I frustrated, or why, you know, why can't I stand that person? Well, what's going on here? Look deeper. Yeah. Yeah. These are all great examples. Anybody else want to throw one out there? Yes.
Kind of gloom and doom.
Yeah. Gloom and doom. Woohoo, I'm an ethicist. Let's go.
My friend here and I, and mother, we were born before the atom bomb fell. Mm. And in our lifetime, this is something that is, you know, every age has had its problems. That's not true compared to our age. We had an atom bomb. It blew up just a few days before the Feast of the Virgin Mary on August 15th. The world changed. In the meantime, more people are living on this planet than have ever lived and died. We don't have a green patriarch in Constantinople, who's not going to be there very long, for no reason at all. We've never had a green patriarch. This is the first one.
Yeah, right, so people are...
What do you mean by green?
He means that he's an environmentalist. He's called the green patriarch. That's a title that the press use for Patriarch Bartholomew because of his interest in protecting the environment. So that's a great resource there within Orthodoxy to bring to contemporary situations.
And who would have ever thought that the State of Israel could come into being and set up the scenario for Armageddon? This is all in my lifetime. And I'm 74 and going on 19.
Optimism, another resource.
And, unless we have a huge, I want to say, ethical change of worldwide consciousness, we're not going to get very far. I don't even want to mention the fact that there are continents of plastic floating around in the oceans. You know, I don't want to go even there. But left with that nice, happy note. Not only do we have resources, but the fact is, we don't know. Whatever resources we take with respect to the immediate future, maybe even within my lifetime, I hope not, that what we do is going to be helpful. We can only have faith.
Right.
That's all there is.
Well, faith may be our, you know, one of our greatest resources to take to this. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you? No. Okay. Sir.
Yeah. Just to compliment what he's saying. Do you think that dark day now. You take the movement of the arrow spring as a scene for Armageddon in the future.
I'm sorry.
I mean, the Arab Spring.
You're right. Okay.
As setting the scene for Armageddon.
No.
All right.
Another cycle of history is how I
spark pitch.
Yeah, it is what it is. We'll have to wait and see what the Arab Spring brings us. But you know, we go. You know, it's history. So, yes.
This isn't quite an answer to your question about resource. It's just a distinction that the Holy Tradition gives us that you haven't mentioned yet, that I just mocked. And that's, you know, the difference between the senses of our, you know, our body and our mind and the capacity of our heart. There too, the noetic capacity is differentiated in the Holy Tradition from all of the other sensations. And it seems to me that one of the problems of the internet age is that it's like heroin for all of our other senses. It's like another magnitude greater than where we were before with like this television. It's
right.
Like another magnitude greater problem for all of the distraction that can happen to all of our senses. And that means that we're struggling even more to quiet and gather all of that so that we can find our heart. And discernment comes from the heart. It's
right.
Not going to come from thinking and choosing. It's going to come from God working in our heart, informing our heart.
Right. It actually, I think it can go both ways, but it really lives with our feeling, with our heart. But
this
we can kind of train
about
it.
The internet age,
yeah,
is that it's like heightened all of that stirring up of sensation, images,
right.
and that makes it so much harder to find our heart. And
right. And we need to at some level train ourselves to turn off the computer, turn off the TV, and that's something, you know, everybody learns, I think, at their own pace. Unfortunately, I would love to be able to just, you know, have a magic formula and be like, here, go ahead. But everybody will come to that realization themselves that these things that they're watching on YouTube. And don't get me wrong, I like YouTube videos as well as anybody, but within limits, you know, and this sort of gorging, if you will, on internet videos or whatever it may be, doesn't fulfill them, and we'll go looking, I think, somewhere else at some point. I mean, that's my hope, I guess, is that they'll come to that everyone will come to that realization. And I hope that as the internet is around more, that future generations will see previous generations having gone through that struggle and found a balance, and will have a more immediate sort of role model. Sir, excuse me.
Asking about resources that we can turn to. I think these had obvious things like church, liturgy, sacraments. But I think one that are really obvious, anything has a capacity for good or bad, is books, radio, television,
mm-hmm.
and internet.
Right. You know, the resources are out there. It's right. I mean, at some level, just like, you know, we no longer, I don't know if anybody ever thought that printing was a horrible thing, but, you know, we know now that good things came out of the printing press and bad things came out of the printing press, and that we have the capacity to choose which books we read, which newspapers we choose to read, what we choose to, that we need to think about, who publishes these things, and, is that somebody we really want to invest our time in, that we'll start to have those kind of, hopefully we already are starting to have those kind of thought processes about the internet, and we can really make use of the tools that are there. You know, you know, I think about medical sites on the internet, and, you know, I was talking to a doctor once, and I said, oh, well, I read on the internet. She went, no, no, you can't read on the internet. That's horrible. I said, well, I was at the Mayo Clinic site. She's like, oh, okay. Okay, that's you know, like you were at a doctor, you know, something written by doctors, that's fine. But she was really horrified that I would be going off, like being random chat rooms and, you know, learning about, you know, medical conditions from that. Excuse me,
You know, we forget too, you can go on the internet or YouTube and you can watch liturgy broadcasts live from the Archdiocese Cathedral.
Right. And many churches are doing this.
From the Philokalia.
Right,
so
right.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a tool.
It is a tool. Yeah, and churches are doing that. So if you are, I'm from Minnesota, so my first thought is, if you're snowed in one Sunday morning, yeah, you guys wouldn't understand that, but you know, you can't get to church. You're raining, it's raining too much.
Well,
you drank too much last night, and you can't get to church. In some churches, you know, you can pull it up on your laptop and watch it that way.